Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Roper Report Exiles podcast in association with Vaux Breweries. My name is Richard Spear and I'm speaking to you from the windy wilds of Snowdonia. So if you hear some sound effects in the background, you know why. And we're in a positive mood today. Sunderland are storming away at the top of the league, at the top of the third tier, unbeaten and scoring for fun. But unfortunately, this pod won't be focusing on Mel Ray's wonderful, dynamic young ladies team. That's for another pod. And you can also read match reports that Graham's been doing on the Roper Report website. 3-1 win against Loughborough on Sunday was good to see. Unfortunately, we'll be covering the men's team today. Joining me down the line from Lincoln, we have John Stacey. You all right there, mate?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm as positive as I can be. On a personal level, I'm all right. On a football level, other than all right.
No, I'm sure we'll be hearing a bit more about that in a minute. And we've also got Chris Wynn from Sheffield. You all right, Chris?
You all right, Rich?
That's good. Thanks for standing in that last minute call up.
Yeah, no bother.
Someone was injured in the warm-up and you've taken this place. And
super sub.
Yeah, absolutely. And some might call him the Colchester Casanova. We've got Bomber from Gloucester. How are you, mate?
Meh. I'm all right. Similar to John. Anything other than the football, I'm all right. Football-wise, just meh.
Yeah, I think we're all a bit like that.
Yeah.
So, John, you were at the match last night, along with Danny Roberts off the pod as well. A little Lincoln trip up to Scunthorpe. How was Tuesday night in an empty Scunthorpe ground?
Very cold, both in emotions and physicality. It was a bit dead. It was probably about a third full of the whole ground, as in, like, there was one side completely empty. The sort of terrace side of the Scunny fans was probably about, I don't know, a quarter full. The away fans obviously were all in one place, so it sounded and felt like there was more of us there, but it's probably about even, actually. And it started off pretty well, in good spirits, really, from a fan's point of view. We were all laughing and singing songs, and it was quite loud. There was, for some reason, because Burge started down our end, we were just shouting, "Lee Burge," over and over and over again, and he loved it, and he was clapping and stuff, and yeah, it just sort of went downhill a bit. I think the highlight of the whole night was that Danny was stuck next to what can only be described as somebody who requires looking after, because he was mental. And he was just screaming and starting chants, and you could start him off with like the smallest thing, and it was brilliant. And I just kept egging him on, and he was right in Danny's ear. It was brilliant. But yeah, terrible game. Let's talk about the football. Let's get it out of the way. It wasn't nice to watch. I've said it a couple of times today. It was probably the worst game of football from a Sunderland point of view, from a supporting your team point of view, that I've ever seen. I've played in Sunday League where I've seen majority of the team playing better than what I saw our team play. I'd go as extreme and as honest as that. That's not me exaggerating. There was a good 7 or 8 of the players that looked like they didn't want to be there, walking about, not doing much at all. And when they were doing it, that it was, you know, wayward passes. It was looking around, aimless. It was going backwards. It was slow. And it was the same old story, as you all know who's seen it and watched it on whatever parasitic stream you wanted to watch it on. But yeah, it was basically horrific. Not many positives to take away from it at all, really.
I was listening on the radio, and Barnsley and Benno were as unhappy as I'm sure most people who follow Sunderland are, just at that performance level, lack of...
I feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for anyone having to report on the game, because if even if you're trying to be a neutral, but you obviously have a leaning towards Sunderland, which obviously they do when they're reporting on Sunderland in that respect, like just me being there and just thinking about, you know, starting off, we were chatting about the game. It was, you know, we were sort of like as you do in the stands, you're chatting to your mates and stuff like that. Towards the end, 60 minutes, probably maybe even 50 minutes in, I just literally, I've never been so silent in my life. As you lot know, I'm not that silent as a person. But but frankly, I've never been so silent. I didn't want to talk. I just couldn't even look. I was at times, I was thinking, where can I look where it's not this dire pitch of football? It was horrible. It was painful.
I think that's even worse though, John, isn't it? Like when you get to a stage where you're not even angry about it anymore, yeah. You just literally... not asked.
Yeah, I mean, I went through a really brief angry phase. I was screaming stuff. I never get angry from the stands. I don't understand people like that, you know, effing and jeffing at the players and trying to rile them, trying to get them to play better by being really horrible to them. Just seems weird. But yeah. I was shouting stuff to the players that I felt was just ridiculous. Like, what? Within, for about 5 minutes, I shouted things to Ledbetter, like, why are you going so slow? Obviously, in a bit more of an aggressive way.
Child.
And things like that. And it just felt like, this is redundant. Why am I bothering? Because A, he ain't going to care if he does it at me. B, it's not going to change. Even if I was right in his ear telling him, even if I was Philip Parkinson, he wouldn't bloody change what he was doing. It was ridiculous. It was, and I just, like you say, I just went from anger to just nothing, like numbness, weird.
Because I think before the match, not many people were that bothered about it, to be honest. I mean, my son, after this morning when he found out the result, went, oh, that's all right, we're out of the CheckerTradeLeasing.com trophy. Didn't we want that?
No, this is it. I disagree. Sorry, Tom.
I'm sure it's all right.
because I got a bit excited about it, not just because it's a local game, but more for two reasons, really. I saw it as an opportunity for a scalp to sort of go, you know, batter them and get a bit of confidence.
Scunthorpe's not a scalp, John.
It's not a scalp. No, that's the wrong word. Wrong word whatsoever, but you know, like, yeah, a battering in, so you know, you lead into the international break and you've got a bit of confidence. Second reason was, you know, and we keep saying this about sort of trialing teams and trialing formations and stuff like that. I saw it as an opportunity for like continuance and like trying to see a bit of sort of regularity. So when I saw the team sheet and I saw that it was like a first team, I was like, good. You know, because this is going to show what's happening and what he wants to do going forward. It's not going to be an experiment. It's not going to be a load of fringe players, youth players, whatever. So I got kind of a bit excited sat in the pub beforehand, getting, you know, the team come through. And then it was just all thrown in the bin, you know.
What was the formation last night? Were we playing three in the middle?
Yeah. And it looked like Ledbetter was in the middle on his own in a way of... You had Power and Dobson, and they were supporting the wing play, as in defensively and going forwards. It was like, it just looked odd. It was really weird. There was no 10. There was a massive gap between midfield and McNulty. They weren't really playing overlaps at all, as, you know, they try and do with Anion and Hume. It was quite odd. It was really odd. And, you know, there's an element of a sort of a tiny bit of credit there to maybe Scunthorpe, even though they were dire at times as well, in that they kind of worked out quite quickly what to do for the key sort of tactics that we're trying to do. We were playing it down sort of the old-fashioned inside left, inside right channels, you know, the sort of inner channels. And they just always had two men there, you know what I mean? And it's like, they just always managed to snuff it out. They did the exact opposite of what we did. When they were going forward, they were bombing forward, they were putting numbers in positions, and we had no response. It was just, yeah, it was really, really poor on all angles, really.
John, there's something I wanted to ask you, right, because I didn't watch the game, I didn't follow it, I just saw the result.
What?
But I didn't, apart from the result, I didn't follow it at all. But to concede three goals to a team that's struggling in League Two, and I've seen that clip on Twitter, you know, it's been retweeted on the Roker Report Twitter page about that kind of 20-second piece of defending, which is utterly shambolic. Yeah, like to concede three against that level of team playing like that with what is pretty much, if we're being honest, our first choice back four.
Yeah.
You know, was it really that bad, or was that
to be fair, that clip and anything after the sending off and penalty, to put a little spin of realism on it, it just went to pot. It went majorly to pot. Before then, And actually, for 5 minutes before the penalty, we were actually starting to look a lot better. But there was it was the usual thing of no penetration, no shots, and no looking like that anything was going to happen, you know, to put the ball in the net. It was just we were looking better going forward and passing. But yeah, the penalty was a penalty. You could see it. We were the other end of the ground. You could see it. I don't think it was a sending off because the rules actually state that if he's in the area, the last man rule goes. It's not unless it's a
double
malicious
jeopardy, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, it's double
a malicious
punishment.
Challenge. It shouldn't be a red. So the refs, you know, as usual, well, refs are shit, aren't they? But yeah, that was terrible. But after that, that's why it went to pot. So the other two goals and pretty much everything that Scunthorpe did going forward after that, they looked like Brazil. Do you know what I mean? It was like. And I don't think that's a slight on the team as such. It's a slight of Sunderland were already shit, and having 10 men just made them look even worse, and it did make them look like a bunch of pub players. Do you know what I mean?
That's exactly what it looked like, though, that clip, yeah. I saw. I know it's only a 20-second clip, but
yeah.
Jesus. But
I think touch it with a bit of realism, but that probably, oh man, am I being too positive here? Am I being a bit like now? Probably wouldn't have happened if we had 11 players. I don't think it would have gone anywhere near as bad.
Oh, I don't know. Four players, that just from that clip, those four or five players around the ball, I don't care if you've got 11 or 10 players
fear.
On the pitch.
That was fear. You could see it. You could see it in their eyeballs. It was fear they were going to get sent off. It was fear they were going to give away another penalty. And that in itself is, I don't know what that means. There's so many sort of arguments there, aren't there? Like, is it poor refereeing? Is it people fearing playing the actual game because the referees are crap? Is it that, you know, you see your colleague sent off a couple of minutes before, you're just automatically not putting your foot in anymore? But that lad on the left, that Abu Issa, he was terrible. And he was made to look like he was Raheem Sterling. Do you know what I mean? It was ridiculous. Yeah,
but that's what pace does to us. Any sort of pace against us, we just can't handle it, and we haven't done for a few years. And last night, I mean, even we can talk tactics and, you know, Parkinson trying things like Ledbetter holding with Dobson and Power trying to do all the running for him and all that sort of stuff. But I think from the off, it was just clear that it was Scunthorpe. It was during the week. It was cold. The players have, you know, they're on a bad run. The confidence is low. And none of them wanted to be. None of them wanted to play in that game.
Yeah,
none of them wanted to be there.
The hard thing to swallow, right? And this is for me personally, and I probably a majority of the fans, to be fair, wouldn't have minded not getting the result and going out of the cup yesterday. But it's the manner in which we've been dumped out of the cup, a cup that we got to the final in last season.
Yeah,
it's the manner of that defeat and the manner of our exit, which is a very, very bitter pill to swallow. I said I wouldn't have minded if we'd gone out, you know, having drawn the game, lost on penalties, but actually put in a reasonable performance. The manner, I just can't stomach.
But it was Parkinson trying to force it. Mm. So Parkinson needed a result. He was desperate for a result. So he thought, right, Scunthorpe away, I'm going to put the first team out, we're going to do them, and we're going to get a result, and that's going to go into the international break, and then we've got a good, you know, confidence is up, we've got Coventry in 10 days, you know, jobs are good.
I think it was catch 22. He was definitely doing that, but Bomber's right. Nobody turned
such a
up
risk.
Like they wanted to.
It was such a risk doing that, putting that team out, because look what's happened now, and look at everybody's just arguing about everything now because everyone's just generally angry because we got stuffed at Scunthorpe.
Yeah.
But he didn't need, you know, I don't think he would have been under so much pressure if he hadn't put that team out. It was just a huge risk doing that.
I just hope he's learned his lesson. I hope that he's learned from it, you know, the little minor tactical things, but also learned that things, situations like that are not made for the pressure and the risk taking. Like you say, it's more a case of let's take the pressure off them. Let's have a
I don't think the players needed that game
jolly about it.
At all.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not defending how the players turned up and what they did, and you know that they played as they did. I'm not going to defend that because there's no excuse. But I think the players all needed to take stock and not play in a, you know, auto windscreens midweek game at Scunthorpe. I'm going old school now.
Where do you think we go from here, though? Because, I mean, my reflection on just listening to the game last night was, similar to what you have said, with a full strength team, that is a horrendous result. And if it had been, you know, Mumba in the middle and Kimby Oker up front and some of the young lads who haven't featured getting the chance and we'd gone out, nobody would be reacting the way they... Yeah, exactly. So do you think that some of the reaction today has been spot on, over the top? is the criticism being put in the right places? Because there's obviously been a lot of criticism of the ownership, and I don't think they're going to affect exactly what goes on the pitch on a Tuesday night in Scunthorpe. But what do you think about that reaction, and has it been, you know, proportionate, really?
I don't think it's been exaggerated, the response. I think you're quite right in what you said, Rich. Like, if we'd have put Barley Mumba there, Kimpioka started, to give them a game, it would set the fans' expectations. Actually, we're not that fussed about this cup, but we're going to give the youngsters a try because we don't know when we might rely on them in League One over the course of the season. But Parkinson dug his own grave yesterday by putting out, like I said, pretty much as strong a team as he possibly could put out. So that sets the expectation. That sets the, you know, the level of seriousness to us as how serious he and the backroom staff and the club are taking this game. And we're playing a team, albeit away, that's struggling in the league below. And the team that he's put out is a team that we're expecting to be challenging at the top of League One. So for me as a fan, I'm looking at that. I'm looking at that starting lineup. I'm looking at who we're playing against. And I'm thinking we should be. There's absolutely no excuse for not winning this game. So he's dug his own grave in that respect. And yes, the players have not delivered. And that's on the players. But I don't think the fans' reaction is unjustified. I said, if he'd have played a load of youngsters and actually given the impression that we might get a result, but it's not that important, the league's more important, then as a fan, I could have stomached that a little bit better.
But yes, what you've just said there, Bomber, is exactly right, because the manager's put his stall out. He set his stall in that game. He's put that team out. He's, you know, like you said, it's Scunthorpe, it's League Two team. It's a strong side. And the worrying thing is the players just haven't reacted to him.
Mm.
They haven't reacted at all. They've gone in the opposite direction and just not turned up. And if a new manager, because I mean, 9 times out of 10, a new manager gets a bit of new manager bump. You know, he has a bit of a honeymoon, and he's getting none of that. And the players just aren't reacting to him whatsoever for whatever reason, whether they're still hungover off Ross or whether they're not, they don't rate what Parkinson's trying to put in place. I mean, he's had no time, to be fair. I'm not kind of putting all the blame on him to start with. I mean, the players have got to shoulder some of this, but there was absolutely no reaction. And as you kind of hit the nail on the head there, he sent a signal to the players to say, this is important, we need to win this game, and they didn't turn up.
They didn't react. And there were, you know, there were one or two extremely experienced players on the pitch there, people like Aidan McGeady, who is coming in for a decent amount of criticism for the first time in his Sunderland career, really, certainly since we've been in League One. Do you think that's fair enough? I mean, there's a lot of talk of him, how he's slowing the pace of our attacks down. John was talking about how they were walking around the pitch last night. Is there an attitude problem amongst some of our senior players?
Well, this is my personal worry coming away from last night, just touching on what the guys have just said as well. Everything that's come out of the fan base, if you're going to call it that, you know, looking at Twitter and all that kind of thing, and the outcry about last night, whilst I don't really fully agree with the depths of what people are saying and the expletives and all that kind of thing, what I do understand and what I do kind of agree with is the tone of what Bomber was getting at. This team shouldn't be getting beat by Scunny, regardless of attitude, regardless of it being a Tuesday night in Scunthorpe and it being, you know, Tin Pot Cup. Ultimately, the worrying thing following on from this is what's going to happen if that's the similar or same first team at the next game after the international break. You know, they've just been beaten 3-0 off Scunthorpe. You know, everybody has a right as a fan to be a bit scared about that. And regarding McGeady, I've been feeling that exact way about him every time I see him on this team sheet for about a month, because he hasn't played well for about a month, if not longer. He's looked like he's playing 4 out of 10, like he's barely given enough.
It's been longer than a month, John. I would say this whole season. And arguably in the run up to the end of last season, and including the playoff final, including the Checker trade final, he's not been that same player.
Well, me and Danny were talking last night about McGeady, right? And we were saying that he looks like he doesn't want to be here, etc., right? If he doesn't want to be here and he's out of contract or whatever at the end of the season, I don't know if that's right or whatever, I don't know what the ins and outs are, someone will correct me on that, but if he's out of contract or whatever, he's looking for a new contract. He's old now. He's in his 30s and whatever, like, in the terms of a footballer, right?
Yeah.
He should be trying his arse off to get a decent contract somewhere else, because if we end up staying in League One, God forbid, at the end of the season, and he's playing like he is now, and he's not helped us at all to get out of that league, because everybody keeps harping on about he's the best player in the league and all this kind of thing. If we've got the best player in the league, should we really be mid-table in League One?
Yeah, anyway. No one's going to be picking him out.
Exactly. No one's he's going to have to retire. Basically, the culmination of our conversation was he's got to retire at the end of the season. If we're League One and he hasn't gone anywhere, he's literally got nowhere to go. Mm. You know, we'd be ridiculous to give him another contract here, and he wouldn't be able to get one. He'd be playing in the Conference South or something. Do you know what I mean? It's not happening.
I mean, I really hope he can pick it up before the January transfer window. Chris, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, so just about the attitude thing, I mean, you were talking about that. I mean, I don't know if you saw Leadbitter's interview after the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I missed it.
That had me worried, because, I mean, to be fair, he was up. He looked like he was...
I thought he was going to cry.
Yeah, he looked like he wanted to hit someone, to be honest. Or at least he maybe just had or something like that, because he was absolutely fuming. But, I mean, some of the things he was saying was... I mean, I was quite worried because he didn't mention the new manager once. And, you know, he's again, we're on a bad run. We've just had that result. He's just had a bad performance. But not once was it kind of, oh, yeah, we want to get started for this new manager. And, you know, the things that you'd expect a captain to say, to come out and say, you know, we're all behind him. We just need to get, you know, results started. And there was none of that. It was all hinting that we need to stick together and there shouldn't be little groups and all of this sort of stuff. And nobody mentioned little groups breaking off, but he seemed to want to bring that up.
Well, it might be that Parkinson has come in and actually told some of those players a few home truths in that they haven't been doing well enough. And some of the bigger players might, with the bigger egos, might have got their backups at that, not like being told how it is and that it's not been good enough and that you're better than League One, but you're not showing it. So buck your ideas up. And they might have got their ass out because of that.
That interview after had me more worried than the actual result. Because he seemed to hint that just things weren't good, you know, on the training ground, behind the scenes. And he was trying to get everyone together, which suggests at the minute they're not.
Well, that's Scunthorpe United dealt with, I think. we will have to move on. I'm sure we might come back to it. You never know. This evening, no, I mean, we're recorded on... Wednesday evening, about an hour or so after Stuart Donald just finished an extended interview, as it turned out to be, on BBC Newcastle this evening, and in the aftermath of Charlie Methven appearing on Rope Report at the weekend. And I want to talk a little bit about the investment and where we're at with it, because things seem to have been clarified to a certain extent. This evening, it's now clear that it's a loan that we're talking about. We're talking about a £10 million loan from the American trio, if not four of them, to Madrox, which is the holding company for the club, secured against the club's assets as well as shares, which was an interesting part of what Donald said. He said it was a belt and braces approach from the Americans. In terms of wanting to make sure that they got their money back. And Donald was putting it out there as almost risk-free for the club, that all the risk is being carried by himself, Juan Satori and Charlie Methven. Who listened to that interview or has been able to catch up on the main points of it? And what are your perspectives on that investment, that takeover, which is then an investment, which is now a loan?
You go, Bomber.
Yeah, all right. So I was going to say, I listened to it live, and... First and foremost, I thought it was a brilliant interview. Whether you're a fan of Stuart Donald and what he's doing or whether you're not, you cannot argue the fact that he was put under a bit of pressure there for a good part of 45 minutes. And it was a brilliant interview. I think he answered truthfully. He answered things honestly. I think my opinion on it, at risk of being too simplistic in it, I couldn't really give a shit if it was a loan and whether it was a loan to Madrox or it was a loan to Sunderland and whether... If Stuart Donald doesn't make those repayments, the investors come and actually take over the club. We're talking about £10 million in a club that two seasons ago was over £150 million in debt to Ellis Short. So you know, in the grand scheme of things, I don't care where that money's come from or what happens with it. And I don't think the fans should do. And I had a little bit of a rant on Twitter about it afterwards, because he's come in for an awful lot of abuse, Stuart Donald has. And it winds me up so much that fans call him a chancer and this, that, and the other. And they are unable to separate the performances on the pitch to how Stuart Donald runs the business that is Sunderland Football Club. And if you were to take the footballing aside from it and look at it as a business, he has taken a business that was hundreds of million pounds in the hole, losing money hand over fist, and has taken the time and the effort and some of his money, and irrespective of where that's come from, there's people crying about him using the club's own money to fund it. Bollocks. He has taken the club to a point in which it was probably going to cease to exist at some point, and has got us to where we are today. And people cannot separate that from the results on the pitch. And because things aren't going the way that we all want on the pitch, all of a sudden it's Stuart Donald, it's Charlie Methven's fault, their chances, they're trying to make a quick buck, this, that, and the other. It's quite clear that he is not, and he wants to do what is in the best for the region of the Northeast, and for all people like me who aren't from the Northeast but are Sunderland fans, he is trying to do the best for each and every one of us. And it winds me up so much, the fans that go at him personally and cannot separate the results on the pitch. He didn't sign Will Grigg knowing that he wouldn't perform for us. He didn't think, oh, I'm going to go spend £4 million of our money now and just waste it. He signed Will Grigg under quite a bit of pressure, let's not forget, from the fans to say, oh, this is the signing that we want. And all right, it hasn't worked out. Is that Stuart Donald's fault? No. And there's just a number of other things that he has done in the best interest of the club. And because it's what the majority of the fans wanted, and because it's not turned out the way we wanted to in terms of results on the pitch, he's a figure of hate for, albeit a minority, but a very vocal minority of our fan base. And it's embarrassing, in my view. It is embarrassing.
I think at this point, we just need to put a disclaimer out that Bomber doesn't work for Stuart Donald.
And,
no. Roker Report don't work for Stuart Donald. And we do have opinions of each side of this.
Don't get me wrong. I think if things don't go smoothly, he should be held accountable on the business side. Sunderland has a business, but he cannot be held accountable for things that happen on the pitch. And it's all right to look back in hindsight and go, oh, well, we got rid of Jack Ross and got in Phil Parkinson. 90% of the fan base wanted Jack Ross gone. Stuart Donald did it. They got their wish. And now, because things haven't improved, all of a sudden it's Stuart Donald's fault for getting rid of Jack Ross.
Well, it's a blame 100%, game, isn't it? It's a blame game.
Exactly.
We're looking for people to point the fingers at. And we've never been in a situation, well, we have been in a situation like this in the past, but it feels like a lot of these fans don't understand that this isn't the first time, and they're feeling like it's the first time where they can't find answers. There isn't an easy answer. You know, they're looking at what's on the pitch. We're getting beat 3-0 off Scunthorpe. Well, it's got to be someone's fault. Do you know what I mean? And new manager, they get a bit of grace. Maybe they're just flying at Stuart for that reason. I think you're exactly right, though, Bomber. Everything you've said regarding the 10 million, regarding what he's done to the club, it's really easily forgotten that we could have really easily ceased to exist at any point. And that's going forward in the future. What Stuart's quite easily and simplistically outlined in his interview, I think, is that even if it doesn't work out, and even if he does make a load of mistakes, because I think he does put his hand up and say he's made mistakes a lot, but he's probably going to make some more. Even if it does happen that way with regards to what's happening with the team on the pitch, what he has done is stabilise the club. And ultimately, the 10 million investment from, you know, outside sources, you know, openly saying that whatever happens, he could give the 10 million back himself, et cetera, et cetera. The transparency, whether you believe it or not, is absolutely spot on with regards to the fact that we've never had that before. Don't think many clubs have had that before. And we wouldn't know that we were close to ceasing trade, and we wouldn't know that he'd saved the club unless he was so open about it. So we've got a lot to be thankful for. We've got to remember that. I think that there's no problem with questioning what he's doing with regards to the things that he does around the club, as long as it's sort of with credence. You know, like, there's people questioning the Greek side of things and the sort of like logistical side of things regarding the club and all that kind of thing. But people make mistakes, like humans make mistakes. It's not his entire fault here. Like, he's done what he thinks is right for the club, and he's quite happy and honest as a human to say, I might have made a mistake there. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's massively important for me. It's massively important for me as a Sunderland fan as well, because Would you rather it be completely silent? Would you rather it be you think things are happening? You're gesturing and you're thinking somebody, Ellis Short's done this, Ellis Short's done that, Martin Bain's done this, but you have no idea what's happening. Do you know what I mean? It's like, at least we kind of know where we stand a little bit. Even if you don't really believe it, you know, something's being said, you know, I think it's massively refreshing regardless. And I think people have got to understand the situation better and not just look for a blame game. You know, we're shit on the pitch, not because of him, like you say. We're shit on the pitch, not because of a lot of other people. It's not just Stuart Donald and Charlie Methven. You know, there's people getting the blame, like the media team and people like that and other sort of like areas of the club that are getting the blame for things that they haven't had any part of. It's really weird at the moment, the sort of attitude and feeling around the ground and around the club.
Chris?
I don't disagree with everything you have said. I mean, I agree with 99% of it, but just when you say, you know, not everything's his fault, and I agree with that, but, you know, Stuart Donald is the owner of the club and he's putting things in place and he's making decisions. You know, like you said, he made the decision to pull the plug on Jack Ross, fair enough, and most people agreed with that, but it's then his job to make the right decision afterwards. We can't decide right now whether he has made the right decision, but you can't say that in the short time Parkinson's had, he's moved us forward. I mean, it might turn out to be the best decision in the world, but you can see that the fan base, you know, the morale of the fan base went down when he made that appointment. Rightly or wrongly, you know, whether you agree with that or not, that was just fact. People took a hit. And then, you know, as, you know, I'm just kind of modern day with anything, everyone just gets angry about everything. With the results, it just means that it's just spirals into everything else. If we were top of the league and we stuffed Scunthorpe the other night, people wouldn't be asking these questions of Donald and Methven and Sartori. Nobody would be even mentioning it. All of this would have only been a few people on Twitter going, oh, look at this. Has anyone seen this paperwork that's come out today? Nobody would have questioned it. But he's made the decisions. He's put things in place. He, you know, he pushed, you know, things last season on recruitment. He's put those people in place. So, yeah, look, I completely agree. I think he's been good. I think he's done a good job to put us on an even keel from where we were. But and he'd be the first to say that he doesn't escape criticism for some of the decisions he's made.
So I think just to caveat that, just to finish, because I'm aware that I went on a bit of a rant there. Like, I 100% agree that he should be held accountable. He's owner of the football club, like you quite rightly say, Chris. He's owner of the football club. So ultimately, the buck stops with him, and he'll be the first person to admit that. And if he's the person, I assume there's a number of people that were involved in the decision to appoint Phil Parkinson. So he needs to be held accountable for that, particularly when there were other people who most fans would argue would be more suited for the role. So he should be held accountable for that. But the thing that frustrates me is people look back and are a bit kind of revisionist about it and said, oh, wow, we're no better off than when we had Ross. And people on Twitter saying, oh, is it too late to get Jack Ross back in? Those are the same people that, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago were crying for him to Stuart John to get rid of him.
Yeah, but I was the same. I thought, you know, Ross's time had come, but, you know, I actually thought Ross did a really good job and, you know, given time. But I just thought with the way the fans were feeling, I don't think he was going to come back from that, or it was going to take some superhuman effort from the players to actually go on a run that kept him in a job. But the problem is, from that point, you take the decision to sack him, which is fair enough, but then you have to do a good job on the recruitment side to get the right person in. If you're making decisions like that, you have to make it worth it, because it's a tough decision. Yeah. Because I think Jack Ross was almost a guaranteed playoff finish. I mean, you might be talking 50, you might be talking 60, whatever, but I think he was a guaranteed playoff finish. So it was a toss of the coin, and you have to make it worthwhile. You have to. You don't get many shots at it, because you can't keep sacking Parkinson, and you're pretty much stuck with Parkinson unless you do something drastic. So if you pull the trigger on someone like Ross, who was more or less going to get you in the mix, you have to make it worthwhile, and I'm not sure he did.
Well, I think the decision of sacking him was about balance and realism, and I think that's the overarching thing about the whole conversation as well. Effectively, Jack, by the sounds of things and by the sounds of what's happening now, had his members of the squad, groups of the squad, that really backed him. You know, you're hearing all this about McGeady thinking Parky's crap and he misses Ross and he's just in a hump because of that. But and then Ledbetter's interview last night, you know, that spoke volumes, if you ask me, about he's not convinced. He's not convinced about Parker yet. But the whole sort of like club ownership and running, this is what I was getting at. I wasn't backing Donald, like the same as we all have, I guess, really. This one thing we've kind of semi-agreed on. I'm not backing him as saying he's brilliant and he's perfect. What I'm trying to say is I think the people who are hammering him, and especially on a personal level, need to understand that it's about balance and realism here. Like, he has made mistakes, but he's also done a hell of a lot for the club that, you know, we wouldn't have a club to be supporting if it wasn't for. And yeah, you don't score points. You don't think, oh, because he's done that, let's give him loads of leeway. You constantly question things, but you do it in the right way. You know, you do it as a proper fan. You do it in a sense of questioning things in a normal human way. Don't just jump on any old sort of horrific bandwagon about, you know, how he's a chancer and he's trying to skim money off, when you have no idea of what he's actually doing and you have no clue of what his motives are or whatever, you know.
Go ahead, Chris.
I was just gonna, on that, I don't really get that argument either, because let's say they're right. Let's say he is a chancer. Well, he's, even if he's only in it to make money, which, to be honest, I wouldn't blame him for anyway, you know, he might be doing it because he really loves football and all that sort of stuff, but there's a fair chance he's in it for the money, which is fine. I don't really care about that. But to make that money and to be successful in being a chancer, he needs someone to be successful.
Yeah.
So even if you think he's a chancer, and even if you think he's only in it for the money, I don't care. Because he still has to get to the same place with, even if he loves Sunderland and does it for the love of the game, he still has to get to the same point.
Yeah, irrespective of what his motives are, the club needs to be successful.
Yeah, the same people who are calling him a chancer are the same people who are saying that he's done a terrible job at running the club and we're doing rubbish because of him. It's like, they don't go together. Like, he's trying to earn money from this club if he is a chancer. If you're calling him a chancer and he wants to earn profit, he's not going to earn any profit by driving it into the ground.
No.
Yeah.
Well, there's,
fair enough. I hope he makes some money out of us.
Yeah.
Well, from my perspective, listening again, just thinking about the interview this evening, I think what was really telling actually was, you know, Stuart always comes over as a pretty decent fella, as a decent bloke, you know, and he was talking about how the fact is he's had to take time out to deal with his family, to look after his parents. You know, we're talking about human beings here, and I think online a lot of people often forget that. It's easy behind a keyboard to be vitriolic and nasty about people. But, I mean, but people do have good reason for being frustrated and, I think, confused. And I finished listening to the interview with Charlie Methven a little bit confused about what the structure of this deal, this investment deal was. I thought Charlie's answers were not necessarily easy to understand, shall we say. But I think Stuart actually clarified quite a lot of that in today's interview. I mean, we'll all be waiting for our checks to come through, obviously, after backing them as much as we have, have done here. I'll be watching my bank account very closely. But
I'd be happy with some free books, that'll do.
Ah, that would be nice. Yeah. So
you're right there, Rich. We did need tonight. Stuart Donald needed to come out. We needed that.
Yeah.
We needed some clarification because, you know, Charlie Methven muddied the waters a little bit. And I think, you know, like you said, he had a good reason for his absence, and fair play to him. You know, he's, you know, like you say, we've all got families, we've all got things to do, but fair play for coming out tonight. I think the club, the fans needed to hear some clarification, and he came out and did it. So fair play to him.
Hi. So we're going to move on now. Earlier this evening, I spoke to Jill Fox from the East Midlands Supporters Association. It was a nice chat I had with Jill, and here she is now. So hi there, Jill. You okay?
Hi. Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. You?
Nice one. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm recovering from the game last night, but, you know, we'll get over it. It wasn't good, was it? So I'm guessing from your accent, Joe, we've had a chat before we started recording, that you are you're originally from the Northeast, but now you're down in the East Midlands. You can tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Crook in County Durham, and I moved down to Nottingham basically for work in 2000. So I've been down here quite a while. Get back up to Sunderland as often. Well, I've got a season ticket, so every few weeks to see Sunderland play again, but other than that, that's pretty much all I go back up on for, if I'm honest.
And do you get to away games as well?
Not as much, which is weird, because to be fair, it'd be easier to get to all the away games than it would to the home games.
Yeah, especially when you've got a season ticket, you get priority, don't you?
So, but I think I'd be divorced if I went to every game.
I think I would be in exactly the same position. I've been going to a lot of away games from our base over here in Wales this season. Not that many home games, but we should get to a few more over Christmas, hopefully. So, can you tell me a little bit about the history of the Sports Association in the East Midlands and kind of what you get up to?
Yeah, I mean, we're really new, so we're a little bit just kind of building the branch at the minute. So we kind of started, Ian, who's the chairman, he kind of started it earlier on this year and gradually built it up. And I think it was in about August time we had our first branch meeting and kind of got a committee together and did all like the bank account and all like the proper setup of it. We did doing that, and we've got about 20 odd members at the minute. So we're just kind of trying to get in place like whether people want buses to the ground, stuff like that. So at the minute we don't do a great deal, but obviously the more people we can get involved, the more we'll be doing.
It's good to get 20 members from a standing start is really good in,
yeah, it's all right.
In any group.
So I think there's a lot of us down here, to be fair. There is a lot.
It's not that far out of the way, really, from the northeast. I mean, my auntie lived in Nottingham for a very long time. I think there are a few. I think there are a lot of people moved down for work over the years, and a lot of kind of connections between the two areas in terms of industry and stuff, isn't there?
Definitely. I think a lot of like mining people moved down back in the day, didn't they?
Yeah, certainly. I think my dad had a job interview down in Nottingham at one point. As the mines were closing, so you've got those connections, and so you said you haven't managed to get together to go to games yet, and you are new, so that's totally understandable. So how do you follow matches when you're not going to the stadium? How are you following the away games?
I've got the SAFC app, so I tend to either watch or listen on there, depending obviously whether I've got the time.
Yeah. I'm using that as well. I've got the audio subscription, and it's not always the most stable of apps, I have to say.
No, you go onto anything else on your phone and the app just dies, which I don't want to whinge about suddenly because there's enough to whinge about, but they could do with sorting that out.
it isn't great. I mean, and for exiles, you know, for people who live away from the northeast, we can't get the match commentaries on BBC Newcastle. Mm. We rely and we pay extra, you know, to follow the club. And you know, there have been occasions when I think one time they played in a completely different episode of Total Sport. When I was trying to listen the other week, it seemed to have a kind of a Newcastle phone in. So, to sort that out would be, I think, a priority for them. So do you have any events, trips, meetups planned? Are you at that stage yet?
Yeah, I mean, we were due to have a meeting a couple of weeks ago, but loads of people had to pull out with work and kids and all the rest of it. So I think we're planning one pretty soon, but we just don't have a date in place yet. But I mean, if anyone wanted to join us, obviously if they go onto Twitter or what have you, then we'll be putting the date on there. So I think we've got a Facebook group, we've got a Twitter group. I think it's SFC East Midlands, and then obviously everything goes on the Twitter group, so if anyone's interested, join us on there and get yourselves along.
I'll tweet at you later as well, get that out through my Twitter, and I'm sure the lads who control our Twitter accounts will give you a retweet too. So people in the East Midlands can join in. Where have you met up so far? Because there's a few towns and cities in the East Midlands, and it's a reasonably big area. Where have you been meeting?
We tend to stick to Nottingham because that seems to be where the majority of us are based, and it's pretty much the easiest for everyone to get to. It's got a few people in Lincoln, a few in Leicestershire, Derbyshire, so kind of Nottingham is a bit more central for everyone really, and like I say, most of us are in Nottingham. I think
we've got our own little cluster of Sunderland fans and exile podcasters in Lincoln. We've got ones on this pod with us today, John. I won't be very happy after last night's result. And I think you've been in touch with Danny as well.
Yeah. There was a lot of chat on our local group chat last night. We've got like a WhatsApp group. So again, if anyone wants to join us, obviously ping us your details and we'll get you on that. But yeah, I was out last night and got onto my phone later on, and I think I had about 105 messages, and I kind of saw that before I saw the result and just thought, oh, for God's sake. The joy of being a Sunderland fan.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, hopefully things will be on an upward trajectory after the international break. Let's fingers crossed for that. So thanks a lot for your time this evening, Jill, and we might meet up at some point in the future. And yeah,
thanks for having us. It's been lovely speaking.
All right, thanks a lot, Jill.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Cheers. It was nice to hear of a new branch getting started up, and hopefully they'll keep in touch with us and we'll bring some of their meetups and other events that they're doing to you and for fans in the East Midlands area. And we're going to move on now to our regular feature, Martin Wanless's Playing Away Game. It's now turned into a league amongst us exiles. If I get the rules of this right, I'll be very surprised with myself. But I'll introduce the game that we're going to be discussing. Our bit of a nostalgic look back at some more positive times, and this really was a positive time for Sunderland. I keep choosing these. We're talking about a game on the 14th of November 2010. We are talking about Sunderland playing away from home against Premier League champions, who at the time were Chelsea, and we won that game 3-0. We had Steve Bruce as manager. Chelsea, as I say, were champions. We finished the game in sixth position. And just for reference on this, Bolton at the time were fifth in the Premier League.
That is a world ago then, isn't it?
It really is. And it does show you that we're not unique in this. But we are talking about the 2010 Steve Bruce squad. We are 3-0 away at Chelsea, and there was one particularly excellent goal scored in this game, and that might be a bit of a clue to you. So I'm going to go through. I'm going to start with John, because that's what I've got written on my list. We're going to start with John, and so you get rules on this game. I'm going to get the rules up on my screen. So each player takes turns to name a player. You get two lives, so two incorrect answers each. After that, you're out. If you name a sub, you have another go. And the last man standing gets 2 points in our league. If more than one player is still in after the last player is named in the starting 11, everyone who's left in the game gets a point in our league. So I'm going to come to you first, John.
Right.
You can start anywhere in this starting lineup. It's 2010, no Googling. No Mark Lynch is in this. I don't think
he's going to be my first guess.
Oh, sorry.
So the thing for me, right, I'd have probably been all right if I'd not gone first, because I needed someone to set me off a bit with thinking about the teams and the squads. So I'm definitely going to lose a life here. But I'm going to try and play a little bit safe. I say a little bit safe, probably going to get laughed at straight away. Asamoah Gyan.
Asamoah Gyan, yes, you've got it. Yeah, that's a correct.
Oh, brilliant.
So you got Asamoah Gyan up front in that game. Absolutely. So that's one correct to John. We move
that's
on
it.
To
get me coat. I'm off. See you later. Bye.
Oh, yeah, that's your moment of glory. Right, bomber. So we've got the striker. We've got Asamoah Gyan.
Well, I've got two that I think two easy ones. So, and Jam wasn't one of them. So I'm going to play an easy card and I'm going to go Jordan Henderson.
Jordan Henderson. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Correct. He was actually just been called up for England the week before for his first inclusion in the England squad. So that's how far we're going back now as a mainstay of the team now. So yeah, that's a good answer. Jordan Henderson playing in midfield.
Yeah.
Chris, we come to you.
I was actually on my honeymoon in the Caribbean.
So you'll know it. You will have been following it, clearly.
Yeah, you must have watched the game.
I was on a cruise ship going around the Caribbean. I remember reading it in the papers.
Show off.
Ah, there you go. Right. Well, I'm just going to go with an easy one. Easy one for 10. Catamol has to be in. Oh, no.
Catamol is correct. Playing in midfield. That's the other one.
That was the other easy one I had.
So we come back to you for round two, John. Who are you going to go for?
Oh, God. I really haven't got a clue. Let me think. I'm going to say something so wrong here. Why am I so scared of this and nervous? Was that the season that Jan played up front with Darren Bent?
No, Bent wasn't there. Bent is not in the squad, so that's one life lost for John. I'll put a little X next to your name, and you only got one left.
Brilliant.
Right, bummer. So if we now know we can rule out Darren Bent.
Yeah. So I'm going to go and try and guess the goalkeeper, because I think that's probably going to be the most likely to be not an easy guess, but it's going to be one of a couple. So Mignolet or Craig Gordon.
Craig Gordon. That's right. He was in goal that day. You're two for none. Bomber.
Thank you.
In the second round. And Chris, this is your chance to keep up with Bomber. So we've got the goalkeeper, yeah. We've got two midfielders and a striker.
Yeah, well, I know the other two goal scorers, so I'm going to keep them in my back pocket. And I'm going to go for what I think is another easy one around this time, unless he was injured or suspended or something. Do I chance it? Go on. Oh, Bardsley.
Bardsley was out right back.
Yeah, of course.
That's right, yeah.
Of course. I was going to say Bardsley.
So you're two for
now. You didn't, John.
So John, you have to keep yourself in the game with a good answer here, and you're running out of players.
Who have we had so far?
We've had Craig Gordon, Phil Bardsley, Jordan Henderson, Lee Catmull, and Asamoah Gyan.
Right. Zenden,
great answer. That's what I was expecting. I was expecting people to fall down on Zenden, but yeah, that's it. He's still hanging in there, John.
I just remember him dancing with Gyan, but was that the same game or was it a different game? But he was dancing with him when.
Embarrassing dance.
Yeah.
The dad dance.
There's actually a video of this game on the PremierLeague.com, and I'll try and tweet it out later on. Yeah, Zenden was there. So we'll move on to Bomber. You've kept yourself in the game, John. Bomber, you are still level pegging with Chris here.
So I haven't got a clue who the other striker would be. So I'm going to stay in the back four. So you've got Craig Gordon, goalkeeper, Phil Bardsley, right back. El Mohammadi, left back?
No, but you get another go because he was on the bench.
Oh, he's on the bench. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I can't even think. Oh, Richardson.
Richardson, there you go. Yeah. Excellent call. Yeah, Richardson was there, I'm sure, playing at the back in that game, looking at the lineup.
I couldn't think of anyone else who'd ever played left back for a minute.
Well, there you go. So Chris, you're running out of options here. This is the look of the draw with you coming third in the lineup here. So
I'm only confident on two more. So I'm going to use one of the goal scorers up. Danny Welbeck.
Danny Welbeck, yes.
Oh my God, yeah.
What a strike force was my thought. was Jan and Welbeck. I mean,
was this supposed to make us happy or make us more depressed about where we are now?
I think it's probably going to have the latter effect.
Backfired me.
You got that right. So, John, we're back with you. Still with one life left.
Depressed. Yeah, this is where I become depressed and I lose the game. Right. Spanner in the works. I'm going to stick a name out there. Titus Bramble.
He was in the lineup. That's a great call. He's hanging in there. This is going down right the way. Everyone's going to come away with 1 point here. So Titus Bramble was there.
I'm struggling now. Just go through. We've had
Gordon, Bardsley, Richardson, Bramble, Zenden, Henderson, Catamol, Welbeck and Jan. Basically, you've got two players to go for.
So there's only one left in that back four then, is there?
There's only one left in the back four and there's one, I think, was in playing in midfield.
Oh, God.
In
midfield, Mal Branc? Steve Mal Branc?
Mal Branc? No, he's on the bench. You've done it again. So you get another guess.
God.
We might have to count you down here, though.
I'll pass then to try and buy some time to think of someone.
Are you sure you're going to lose a life? Are you sure?
I can't even think of a name, mate. Let alone somebody who might be in the team.
If Chris has got another goal scorer in his back pocket,
yeah, I've got the other goal scorer. Because I'll always remember it. He waltzed through the middle like
he did,
like Pelé. It was Nedim Anua.
It was Nedim Anua. Honestly, looking at that goal back now,
brilliant.
You're like,
absolutely
oh
brilliant.
My God.
How did he do that?
It was
wasn't that the third? Was that the third goal?
I think it was. Yeah.
But I couldn't believe it when I saw it back.
Outstanding goal.
Took about five players on and walked right into the box and just slotted it on. Brilliant.
Brilliant, wasn't it? Fantastic. So we're back with you, John. You're on your last life, right. which is the downside of going first, because you've got to pick.
Yeah,
you've got to get the last player here.
So read through them again for a switch.
So in goal, Craig Gordon, defence of Phil Bardsley, Kieran Richardson, Titus Bramble, and A.N. Other. And then we've got Zenden, Henderson, Catamol, Anua, Welbeck, and Jean. So I've given you that it's a defender we're missing, which you could probably deduce. It's Michael Turner.
Get in there.
And it's one point all round. He pulled it out of the bag at the last minute.
Is that 1 point for all three of us?
I think so. Even though Chris didn't get one wrong, possibly he'll be ahead on goal difference then, having not conceded.
I was actually thinking of Turner as we were going through it, and then I thought, nah, it's not going to be it. And then when Chris said Onua, I was like, Turner didn't play. And then you gave it away when you were like, Onua played in midfield.
Oh, when Rich said centre back, I was thinking, if it had got round, it wouldn't have got round to me, I guess, but I was going to go Anton Ferdinand, and then I would have lost.
No, let me check.
I was struggling after that.
You might have ended up with another player on the bench. No, you didn't. No, he wasn't there. The other substitutes, for anyone who's interested, were Simon Mignolet, Angeleri, Da Silva. Again, I'm not absolutely
Paolo
sure.
Paolo Da Silva.
Paolo Da Silva.
Great player.
Adams, no idea.
Nope.
Malbronk, Rivieros.
What was his first name?
I can't even click through him. He wasn't known to the BBC at that point back in 2010. And they also got El Mohammedi's name wrong on the website as well. But just to give a bit of context, I know we've been on a while, but give a bit of context. Their strikers were Nicolas Anelka and Didier Drogba. They had Ashley Cole in the side, Petr Cech on the bench, they had Kalou, they had Van Aanholt on the bench, and Salah. We bossed that game, 53% possession, 9 attempts on target, 10 off target, absolutely hammered.
They had Salah.
Yeah.
That was not 10 years. That's 10 years
is
ago.
Are we talking a different Salah? Possibly.
Yeah, he's only 24, 25.
So he's true, 15, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, 16-year-old. Not more Salah than.
No, I don't think so.
Absolutely not. Right. Well, you put me right. Thankfully, otherwise I would have been getting a social media storm on that.
Because this has been too joyful, just to bring it back round to the misery that we're going through at the minute, that's the season that we lost 5-1 to Newcastle as well, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think, well done, Bomber.
Yeah, just to dampen everyone's spirits, just to finish off.
I don't think that one will come up on Playing Away at any point this season. But well done for all of yous for getting your point there. Chris kind of wins on goal difference, I think. But
you can take the moral victory, Chris. It's fine.
It was a good performance all round.
I'd rather a draw.
Finally, just one quick branch update from our friends at the North American Supporters Association, NASA. They have their next meeting, meetups linked to the Coventry City game on the 23rd of November, which I'm sure we're all looking forward to with great anticipation after last night. And they're going to be meeting up in New York City, I think in their regular base in New York, probably, and also in Ontario in Canada. You can go to safcnasa.com for all the details of that. Thanks again to Jill Fox for her time earlier from the East Midlands Sports Association. And thanks to you lads. And onwards and upwards. You know, it can only get better from here.
Yeah, can we play a bit of 80s on the way out? Things can only get better.
It's podcast. Fuck off.
Well, we don't need to now. You've signed.
Well, no, we don't need to now.
Well, thanks, we can get the karaoke version.
It's been very cathartic for me. This has been very lovely to get it all out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, we can move on. We can. Yep, we can all move on now. We can all move on. So lovely to speak to you all, lads. Keep well and speak soon.
Cheers, Rich. Out.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.